Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our fall series. This is episode 2, and I'm so thrilled I was able to get Addie Williams from the Netflix show Hack My Home. She is one of the hosts on the show, and if you haven't watched it, you're being crazy. You should watch it. You're really going to enjoy it, and you're probably going to do what I did. You start playing one, and you just binge through the series, and then you text another friend and say, hey, have you watched this new interior design show? And kind of goes on from there, and so I really want to encourage you to watch it. For me, after I watched the series, I instantly was like, I really want to have Addie Williams come on the podcast. So I was super excited when she wrote me right back and was like, hey, give me some dates, you know, give me some interview questions. I'd love to be on the show. For me, I think this conversation that we had was really fitting as we're about to start a new month. We're coming to the end of the year, and you might be feeling in a place where you're not really sure what you want to do next, or you want to push yourself, but you don't know how. And there's just a lot of other things going on that might be holding you back. And I felt like my conversation with Addie was really focused on, if you feel like you're the only person in the room that looks or sounds like you, you know, really use it as your superpower. And when you feel like fear is overtaking your decisions, you know, dance with that fear and do it anyway. And so I absolutely loved that. It's been helping me motivate myself and things that I'm looking at doing in the future. And I hope it encourages you as well. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Mood Board Podcast. I don't even know how to express how excited I am to have Addie Williams from the Netflix show Hack My Home on the show this week. If you haven't watched the show, I don't know what you're doing. Click on it now. But for those of us who have, like, I just fell in love with you. I fell in love with the whole team. So I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. What an honor. I'm really excited to be here as well.
And we're going to get into the show. But I feel like before we do, for first-time listeners, I think a lot of people, one, I felt like when I was watching it, it was so great to see a Black woman who was a general contractor who was just like handling her stuff on every episode and just such like a lovely personality with everybody as well. So I was doing some digging. And so I wanted to know a little bit about your own business before you were on the show called Honeycomb Residential. Yeah. What can people expect from you when they work with you?
Yeah, so I think what people don't realize is I'm not really a TV person. I've done some television, but I do have a full-time gig. And so I'm the owner of a design build company called Honeycomb Design Build, or Honeycomb Residential, depending. We're actually sort of rebranding because we are starting to do a lot more hospitality spaces as well.
Okay.
So we are our higher end design and construction company. We do all the A to Z from, you know, the actual kitchen, bathroom design, and then the permitting as well. And then I have a bunch of construction crews that then would execute the rest of the work. And our typical client has actually gone through a construction project before.
Okay.
And they like it. And so a lot of times we are coming in into a project where somebody has gone through a remodel before. They did not have a great experience first time around. It was not nearly as seamless. Maybe the communication wasn't great, because the reality is designers speak a very different language from architects and from contractors. And so they want to be able to have a more streamlined experience around that. We just approach a lot of our projects and a lot of our design very focused on the planning side. So we typically actually take twice as long in the design portion of things and the planning portion of things before we actually get to construction. So that's kind of, what you could expect from us. We are in California. I live in San Diego.
Yeah.
We have done occasional design projects other parts of the country, not the construction ones, just because I am licensed in California and DC. But now that I'm not living in DC, I don't really get to.
I know. I'm like, can we get you that way on the East Coast?
Mostly for design stuff, because that can, you know, a little bit of that can be done virtually. But the construction bit is a little more challenging.
It's a little bit differently. So I think listeners can already understand, but you wear a lot of hats in your job. And I guess I'm just trying to understand for you, what do you feel like came first for you? Was it like real estate developer? Was it designer, contractor? Where did it all start?
That's actually a great question, because I would actually say real estate developer, but developer could be any number of things. So my first, like, quote unquote, development project was literally, I bought a house. It was up in the suburbs of Maryland, and I had no business buying the house.
What was wrong?
I was 22 years old. Oh. I wrote that earnest money deposit check. It was for $1,000. And I was like, I am crossing my fingers. This thing does not bounce. Like, I, you know, it was just kind of, you know, it was like one of those things, like, where, and you know, part, it's funny because now when I think about it, part of me is always really wanting to channel that, like, 22 year old who never thought about it, who was just like, hey, just let's go on. So fortunately for me, it worked out. But what ended up happening is I bought this place. It was out in Maryland. And my friends who lived in the district would not come visit because it was not metro accessible.
So wait, where was it? Because I went to Howard, and I've lived in D.C. On and off for 10 years.
Yeah.
In the DMV.
Oh my God. So you'd appreciate this, because my second place was on 4th and R right by Howard. And it's the biggest regret I have is ever selling that place. But back to the original. It was in Upper Marlboro, Maryland.
Okay. All right. I have one of my very good friends is from there.
Yeah. And this was many years ago. I mean, Upper Marlboro was like straight up horse country. This was like 20 years ago. Like, when you would drive down, you could see fields, you know? And so 6 months into me owning this place, and, you know, back then there was no like YouTube or anything like that. So I had to kind of like get my hands dirty, and I was like, okay, so how do you paint a house? So I was like, I went and I got the Home Depot book that said Home Depot 1, 2, 3, and I figured out how to paint. So I painted. And then I was like, how do you replace the carpet? And that was like, you can't really do it yourself. You got to hire someone. So I went ahead and did that. And then, you know, and I did some gardening and stuff like that. So it was a very small, teensy remodel.
I know, but you were 22. I just think about how unfocused I was at 22. I was all over the place. Like, I was still going to parties and stuff. I'm like, you bought a house and we're remodeling it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I did that teensy little remodel. And this was a time when the market was just kind of crazy. And so just honestly, sheer luck. I have people who always are looking out for me, obviously, because I ended up putting it back on the market 6 months later, because I was like, all right, I don't have a social life now. And ended up kind of with an accidental flip. And so once that happened, I was like, wait, I just made as much money doing this development project as I do in my regular full-time job that I hate. So that's kind of how I got involved in it. And then for the next 5 years, I moved 8 times. I took the money from the first project. I bought the place in 4th and R and another place. I had roommates, and I would go in, remodel, do stuff. I learned how to put, you know, to do tile and how to do drywall and all of this stuff. I would go in, fix it, rent it out, move to the next place, fix it, et cetera. So that's kind of how I got my chops, learning how to kind of got started in construction. And with that comes design, obviously, because you have to make certain decisions and stuff like that. And so, yeah, that was a little bit of my journey.
That's very cool. So let's jump into now, you know, now you're seasoned, you now know what's going on. You know how to do this. This is your business. What was it like hosting Hack My Home?
Oh, it was such a trip.
And go ahead. There will be a season two.
Okay, so I'll start with the second question because that's a little easier. We don't know right now.
Okay.
It's like a lot of things in the air, and you know, there's a lot of stuff just happening in the industry in general. So, so it's above my pay grade in terms of figuring out when it will happen.
Okay.
Doing Hack My Home was quite an experience. There was like some very, very long days. We would typically be filming between 10 and 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. I'm in my 40s now. I don't want to work that hard.
You're like, where is the tea break? Do we take a break? Like, no.
And that was for 5 months straight, and it was in Atlanta, so I was away from home. So, you know, there were some challenges around that, but it was also so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I think mostly just because our team was really great. My co-hosts you could see it on the show. They were so much fun. Like, I adore them. Mikkel is just like such a hoot. And we communicate every single day. And Mikkel and I's communications is literally like sending each other like goofy Instagram things or things, you know, like Beyonce-isms, you know, all the things that we like loved and shared in common and that just kind of kept us going. And, you know, I've got a really good friendship with Jess going and and it's just been great. And like Brooks actually just sent me a really cool little book in the mail. It was very cute. So it was nice having that group together to kind of experience it. I had been asked about doing some other television stuff because this was my second stint. I had done an HGTV show before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always reluctant about it because, like I said, I'm not really like, you know, before HGTV, I actually did not even own a television. I had no idea what HGTV was.
Oh, what?
And I
this is why people want to film you. Like, tell us more.
I have to say, like, I was cracking up the first time when they were like explaining what HGTV was to me. I thought it was the funniest. I was like, wait, people are watching what? And they're like, people going around renovating houses?
Yeah, we want to watch you do what you've been doing.
Yeah, I was like, really? So that was interesting. Because I'm from like the, you know, I joke and I say I got my construction chops off of this old house. Like, I am like a hardcore like PBS.com.
Yeah.
Watch this old house.
These old house articles are so thorough.
So good.
I'm like, yo, they so do good. Their homework and then some every time.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, so I was skeptical about and not always really eager about doing any more television. And but I heard the concept. I heard that it was an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
I thought it was really important to highlight to be able to show other little Black girls that there's like, that this is a possibility. And that was really a driving force in doing a lot of this. I think that I'm at a point in my life where legacy is important and where influencing other people and paying things forward is important. And I have had some really, really like incredible mentors in my life, and so I'm always really eager to do the same thing for other people. So that was kind of the driving force for Hack My Home, and then it just turned out that it was also just a good time. Like, you know, we had a lot of fun. The family was great. You know, we just formed really deep friendships, and so
And I feel like it comes through in the filming. I mean, I've had several of friends that I've called who started watching it. We were all crying with the family in the hexagon house and the grandparents taking the children.
Can I tell you?
Very emotional.
Those guys, the real deal. Like, I adore them. They are the most wholesome family and just the nicest kids ever. I mean, you don't meet teenagers who are like that.
I know. Exactly. Like, so thoughtful and thinking of each other. Like, what'd they give these kids? I'm like, I got kids. Kids don't act like that.
No. And these kids were like the most respectful, like cutest, just sweet kids. And Grandma Emma and Grandpa Paul are exactly as you saw them, like just good salt of the earth people.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's take a break.
Thank you so much for listening to the Mood Board Podcast. My mom's kicking off spring and summer series all around the stories of home renovations, and boxes are stacked up all around the living room. This podcast has listeners in over 13 countries and almost has 10,000 listens. So thank you for actually clicking on this podcast, and make sure to share it with all your friends and family. Okay, Mom, I'm done now.
Let's talk a little bit as you're thinking about legacy and you're talking about mentorship and wanting to pay it forward. You know, I know one of the things you also do is that you're an angel investor.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are listening, you know, what are you typically looking for when you decide to invest in someone's business?
Yeah. So that's a great question. For me, a lot of it, I have a very specific criteria. So first of all, my typical investment are women-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. That's just a general thing. And I just think a big part of it is because, like, you know, we just don't have the same opportunities.
Yes.
The reality of it is actually when you're investing in a women-owned business or a minority-owned business, the reason why you're seeing all these venture VC angels coming out now trying to have more pitches towards those populations, it's not completely just altruistic. It's not like that. It's because also the data is showing
that it's profitable,
that it is way more profitable than general population, right? And so it's kind of a little bit of a vetting process. I noticed when I would go into like places where people were pitching, the women business owners had really thought through all the different details and frankly would not be showing up when they're not prepared. And that's always been a really big part of it. I would say most of my portfolio has been Black women specifically, and other women of color. And then the third thing that I kind of look for is I look for a social good aspect. Like I do want a business that is profitable, but I also want it to be not just profitable, but to be like growing the rest of a community, right? And so that's also a big part of it, is just, you know, I not just solving things, but, you know, being able to like hire more people, empower more people, like that kind of thing.
Yeah I love it. All right, and we'll get into that. I'll probably email you, so like people listening will be like, how do I get in front of you, how do I present you, so I can find out those details as well. So let's talk about a little bit, you know, how have you personally been able to thrive in this industry where there are labor shortages is one big thing. Mm-hmm. And then frankly, there just aren't a lot of women who are in a position like you are. How have you been able to overcome those things?
Yeah. So let's start with the labor shortage. I think honestly, we have not had as much of an issue with that. I am very, very, very big on what we call in our company culture, no ego amigo, which is you know, I want to hire people who are smarter than me in things, you know, who are better, who would do things way better. My project manager like knows construction way better than I do. My lead designer is so freaking talented. It's just like, you know, and then having those people and then like nurturing them and letting them like grow with the business and letting them and giving them space to make mistakes, giving them space to fail and that kind of thing. So even though construction is very much one of those businesses that there's a lot of turnaround, a lot of my folks actually don't leave. Okay. And I think it just kind of comes down to basic respect and communication and acknowledging the humanity in other people, obviously. Mm. So that kind of leads to the second part, which is about thriving as a woman in this business. I think that certain things that are innately feminine traits that sometimes people don't even really like put value in are actually the things that make me really good in this business.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner, you know, I've got a social life, like all the things, right? Which means I am perpetually multitasking.
Right. Right.
I've honed the multitasking skill. Right. I have had to be a really good project manager. I have had to be really good about communicating. You know, construction sometimes can have a lot of like kind of putting out fires and perpetually putting out fires. So there's like all sorts of different things like that. Those things, and you know, so a lot of times, like someone was asking me the other day, as a woman, don't you feel a little strange being in construction? And the fact is that it's 11% women, but yeah. Also, which is a huge improvement.
Yeah, I was like, it's better than actually just like yeah. Women of color and interior design. We're like less than 5%. I'm like, 11%, woo!
Like, woo! You know, everyone's, I saw that statistic and like they were putting it out there and it was like the, you know, the different like national construction whatever is, and they're like super patting themselves on the back about it. Like, okay.
I'm like, there's a lot more room to grow.
Exactly. There's so much room to grow and there's so much space to be exceptional in it as a woman in the business. Like, you literally have a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Also, the reality is most construction projects now, especially in residential work, are being initiated by the women in their families, right? That's who's getting, that's who picks up the call the first time. Mm-hmm. And they love when it's like they're not getting refreshingly mansplained about things. And so I think that's also just like another thing that's a big advantage. Also, I think this is one of those things that a lot of people don't realize. The wage gap in construction is relatively smaller than way many other industries.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think the last time I saw it, I think it was like 91%, which is a big difference.
You know,
to other industry. I saw like bus drivers, like 40% difference.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there are advantages to being the unicorn here.
In the room.
In the room.
Which you feel like, I mean, especially with the rainbow.
Oh, I have lived my entire life.
You feel so unicorn.
Yeah, I've lived my entire life being a unicorn. I just embrace it. You know, I walk in to the job site and my hard hat has like, have a disco globe hard hat.
I think that's the other thing people like probably don't even understand. Like, as a Black woman, like, you're so used to walking into a space and it's you. Maybe there's somebody else, but for the most part, you're like,
and when you see somebody else, you're like, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Then you see somebody else, you're already too loud and excited about it. And you're
exactly. You're like, that's bonus. Yeah.
Doesn't happen every day.
No.
I think I just went to like this event in Darien and like I saw someone I love and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, Anderson Somersell. And like we took a photo together. I'm like, we're the only two Black people here. We're just really happy. We need to photograph it. We need a hug.
And then we collaborate and it's just it's great. It is but you're right, like I think that my experience is that I'm so used to going into places and being the other. And for a long time, I think when I was younger, I would feel like I needed to prove myself when I get into a place like that. And nowadays I don't. I'm just kind of like,
Anyway, I'm like, no, that's me.
Like, I'm kind of like, if you know, you know, you'll figure it out soon
enough. Right.
I don't need to qualify why I'm in this space right now. But I love kind of watching people as they like come from like a certain mindset that they're a certain assumption, right? They're like seeing like this person says they're a GC, but yet they're a very girly girl and like their nails are done. And like, I bet you she knows nothing about construction and all of this stuff. And then they start asking you questions and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, blah, 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 blah. This is how we do this. And da, da, da. And like watching their faces is just like my favorite version of people watching.
You're like, what is
just watching people who underestimate you the first time
around.
Well,
that is very true. I love that.
Yeah.
That's kind of my fuel. Maybe it's not a good thing, but it is certainly my fuel.
Oh no, it is. It is very entertaining.
So my last question for you, I think for listeners, especially women who are listening to this, what advice do you have for them? You know, for someone who may want to become a general contractor, you know, where they really don't see a space for themselves in the industry. Like, what advice do you have for someone who wants to put themselves out like that?
So I think that the advice that I have will sound generic, but it's just do it. And so I think I will qualify that though by saying that everything is frightening. Every single thing that we all do is really frightening. And a lot of times what you have to do when it comes to trying to deal with that, the nerves around it, let's just put it this way. First of all, yes, just do it, because guess what? You will be successful. Like, you already have a heads up. You already have the traits in you that will make you great at this. There are certain things: resilience, grit, being a good communicator, being empathetic, like being organized. Like, those things already give you a head start. So go ahead and do it. I think that ends up being simple, because the reality is that we've always got the itty bitty shitty committee in our heads that's telling us like, no, but what if this, but what if that, but what if this? And my take on that is like, but what if it doesn't, you know? But what if I fail? But what if you actually soar? But what if I, like, you know, I don't get clients, but what if you do get clients, you know? Just kind of responding to it. And then really going in to, for me, it's always like channeling my 22-year-old just does not think about anything self.
Yeah.
And jumping in with both feet and kind of letting the noise fade away, because you're really channeling that part of you, right?
Yeah. So, be fearless.
Yeah, be fearless. No, or I don't know if it's even be fearless, honestly, because the reality is we all have fear, right?
Yeah.
So acknowledge the fear, say, hey, fear, what's up? Yeah. And dance with the fear, right? And then just get on the dance floor with the fear. You're not going to shake it off.
I love it. I love it.
And if you have to, like, really, like, say, hey, hey, fear, and then turn on I'm That Girl by Beyonce before you send that email, or before you send, you know, whatever, like, whatever your hype song is, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, you play know? A little Bay in the I background
first, but these blah blah kick ain't stopping me, you know, whatever. I'm not doing it for Angela. I'm not being cursing on Angela's podcast, but you know what
I know what she's about. Saying and the hand and gestures.
If you have to, like, get that going, then just do it.
Addie, thank you. I mean, that was such a good ending too, I think, for everybody. Thank you so much for coming on the Mood Board podcast. I really appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I hope you really enjoyed that conversation. It just gave you some extra fuel to start off your week as we move again into another month. And I want to remind everybody too, we have an incredible, you know, lineup of guests coming on the show. So keep listening. I'm loving already the response we got last week from the Gail Davis conversation. Lots of people resonating with her design and really just her perspective between, are we designing for now or are we designing for resale value? And I can't wait to get the feedback about my conversation with Addie and just how it might be pushing you forward if you feel like you're the only one in the room that looks like you, talks like you, acts like you. How do you keep pushing forward? What's going to get you going to make that next big move in your life? So remember to go to angelabelt.com/themoodboardpodcast and check out the shoppable mood board. Again, I'll have links to quite a few things for Addie and her business if you'd like to hire her. And I'm working on the angel investment links as well. Don't worry, we'll have all of that info shortly. And again, I want to encourage you to have your friends and family listen and subscribe. And just asking everyone, please, just to stay safe in these uncertain times. All right, take care. Bye-bye.